good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cody Cup, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, I just had to put myself on mute so we don't have an echo, and I'm just really proud of myself to be able to figure these things out after 7 years, Haley.
Yes, I know. I was, while you were doing that, my dog was going crazy at the Amazon driver here too.
Oh, yeah. And just think the only time I used to hear of Amazon was the forest that they're tearing down. But hey, times change. I just got to give a quick shout out to Devil Radio in Madison. And I was on their show today. I just give them a shout out. And we were talking about the Line 5 situation that, you know, we've dealt with Line 3 in Minnesota. And, of course, this show was started because of the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I got to give a shout out to our relatives out there. You know, it's just a hard deal here. Enbridge is all over the place. Glad Handing and being everybody's friend. But, you know, they're a foreign company that as pipes leak, and you know, there was a brief government deal with them today, and you know, Enbridge has to pay Bad River the band $5.1 million on Line 5 profits, but they are not going to close the pipeline down until 2026. So there's still a lot of ambiguous things that are up in the air with our relatives in Wisconsin. And we know a lot of people listen to the show on the Civic Media Network. So we just wanted to acknowledge that and that we're thinking of you, Wisconsin, because we went through the same things.
Yeah. Always really great to keep bringing that up and keeping it in the forefront.
Absolutely. Thanks. Hey, you know, we got Robert Lilligren on. And before we introduce Robert, we have our friend who likes to take Robert Lilligren. Jesus. Let's start this over. Oh, it's live? What? Robert always wants to steal Robert's thunder, and that's the governor of Wisconsin. So let's take a quick listen to Governor Evers, and we'll get back with Robert.
Hey there, Native Roots Radio. Governor Tony Evers here with my weekly update. Folks, right now there's $140 million in already approved funding just sitting in Madison that could be going out the door to help families and communities across our state. That includes $125 million to fight PFAS contamination statewide that I signed into law more than 280 days ago. And more than 40 days ago, I signed a bill to secure $15 million in crisis response resources to help ensure folks in western Wisconsin have access to the healthcare services they need when and where they need them in wake of local hospitals closing their doors. It's now been weeks since HSHS closed its doors for good, leaving moms and babies without OBGYN services and patients across the region without access to mental health and substance use treatment, urgent care, and so much more. Instead of putting this funding to use for the people of the state, the Republican-controlled Joint Finance Committee has let these investments sit in Madison unspent. Obviously, that's breathtaking. These issues get worse and more expensive with each day of delay. So I'm using my power as governor to call the Joint Committee on Finance into a special meeting on April 16th, and I'm again urging Republican lawmakers to do the right thing and finally release these funds once and for all. It's time for Republicans to stop obstructing and playing politics and get to work addressing the real and pressing needs facing our state. Wisconsinites shouldn't have to wait any longer than they already have for these funds to be released. It's about doing the right
thing. Yeah, it's about doing the right thing. And we really appreciate that from our governor. And hey, We have Robert Lilligren, CEO and president of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and it's always fun to have you on. And we open up with the governor, and it's again, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but thank goodness Wisconsin has him.
Hear, hear, you know, and when there's funds to be spent for the good of the people, you would think that that elected officials would put partisanship aside and figure out how to invest those resources. And it's sad to hear kind of the state of affairs, but you are lucky, or Wisconsin is very lucky, to have Governor Evers.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to talk about two things right off the top here. And one of them is I was at a meeting Monday, and for the Met Council, Native American Council advise. And of course, I wasn't at the meeting that you were at the week before, but it was really exciting to talk about ideas and have that opportunity, Robert.
Yeah, I'm so glad you were there. I was sorry to miss you at the kickoff, the inaugural meeting. I was glad I was there. I'll likely attend more. I'm trying to kind of gauge the vibe and see how much participation is appropriate for me. But isn't it an amazing group? And so, folks listening, I'm a representative on the regional government here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul. It's a 7-county governmental body. It's a appointed position appointed by the governor of the state of Minnesota. I'm the first tribal citizen to serve on this body, and it's over 50-year history. And I'm trying not to squander the opportunity. And so, amongst other things, our Metropolitan Council is responsible for the regional comprehensive planning. And right now, we're establishing the guidelines for the comprehensive plans for the year 2050. And so really working to not just introduce Native perspectives and Native values, but to really center Native voices in this process. And so the first step is this advisory group that will advise us on sort of our land and water commitments. Mm-hmm. But the expectation is that this will transmute into a more permanent piece of our regional governing infrastructure. And I'm just thrilled that you're there. You're the Ho-Chunk rep.
Yep. I appreciate all the work you do, and to get something like this going on, and Allison really working behind the scenes for the Met Council. And it's good to have a seat at the table and start this process.
I agree. And I'm grateful to you. So thank you, Jimmy Gwetch, for being willing to participate. Allison Wachow is the Met Council's first ever tribal and Native community liaison. Mm-hmm. And she's just really hit the ground running. Because this is kind of a new thing for the Metropolitan Council, her role really accelerated and kind of amplified. And so it's moving her career along as well. Mm-hmm. And the group, and I would love to hear your perspective about it, Robert, but they are just top level, multi-generational cultural mm-hmm. carriers and practitioners here in our region, in mostly Dakota, Lakota, mm-hmm. As the original people here. But of course, we have you as a Ho-Chunk rep. There's Ojibwe representation as well. But I mm-hmm. just think they're amazing.
Yeah, great picks. And you know, off air, we'll talk about some stuff. Touch base. It was pretty exciting. You know, you have the likes of Kate Bean there, and the
Dr. Kate Bean.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Kate mm-hmm. Bean. And you know, with her background and still working in the community as hard as she does, I sat next to her and just felt really privileged to be there. And the brothers were there, and you know, we'll talk more about that. I think the second thing, we're going to take a break, Robert, and maybe we can talk a little bit about the Uber and Lyft situation in your city, if you don't mind. It's pretty controversial, and I got a few questions.
Right. I think the Met Council conversation is more interesting, but happy to talk Uber and Lyft.
Well, let's do the Met Council first, and then if we end up there, well, how's that? All right.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minnesota, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Mm-hmm. unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex, recording sexual acts without permission, hurting someone because of their sexual orientation, ripping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger, purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
As we gear up for American Indian Celebration Month in May, it's crucial to prioritize our health, especially with celebrations on the horizon. If you start feeling off, like a fever, a tickle in the throat, or heavy fatigue, don't ignore it. Take an at-home COVID-19 test right away. And remember, if you're not feeling well, it's okay to stay home. Your health comes first. A quick note on COVID testing. The Minnesota Department of Health's free COVID-19 at-home testing program has ended. But don't worry. If you're uninsured, you can still find no-cost tests using the CDC's COVID-19 testing locator. If you have health insurance, you might be eligible for free tests or reimbursement for testing expenses. Just ask your local pharmacy or health insurance provider for more information. Stay informed. Stay protected. Let's prioritize our health this American Indian Celebration Month in May and ensure our communities and elders remain safe and healthy. This message is brought to you in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Health. Visit health.state.mn.us.
Doherty Family College at the University of St. Thomas is your pathway to a bachelor's degree. Located in downtown Minneapolis, Doherty Family College offers an affordable education that includes free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, and a Metro Transit pass. As a full-time Doherty Family College student, you'll benefit from mentorship from St. Thomas faculty, along with paid internships and support from Minnesota's largest private college. Ready to turn your dreams into reality? Apply now at dfc.stthomas.edu. Doherty Family College, your journey to success starts here.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Wow, what a great poster you made there, Haley, for our people that are watching us on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, or it's called X something now, but yes. We got a bunch of people watching us on Twitter, and we started that with when we had Deb Holland on, and of a sudden I must have been all these news people watching on Twitter, because it was crazy. We never had that many people watching on us on Twitter before. So welcome back, Robert. And I've been practicing your name again during the break. My goodness. What the heck was that all about?
But anyway, yeah, I guess we don't know each other all that well. It's only been, 10 years or something.
Thank you so much for your patience. You know, I got to tell you a quick story. So before State Senator was Mary Kunish, she was Representative Mary Kunish Podine. Right. And can you imagine the problems I had with that name? Haley can.
Yes, I can.
She's witnesses it 5 days a week. But and then I got it down and I was correcting people. And then she changed her name when she became a senator. What the heck? But hey, let's talk a little bit about the Mississippi River and the Met Council. I know you've been working and there's things happening there, and there's kind of land back situations, and I think it's a good template for our listeners to hear and learn about.
I think so too, and this relationship to the river is key, right? It was key to people for thousands and thousands of years before Europeans arrived, and since colonization and industrialization, it's really been desecrated. Some of the most sacred sites along the river, Mississippi River and the Twin Cities. And I suspect, and maybe if I ever get ambitious, Robert, someday I'll actually publish on this, but it almost seems like the more sacred a site was on or along the river, the more desecration it experienced. So big pieces of industrial infrastructure like dams, destruction mm-hmm. of sacred islands, desecration by essentially dumping sewage on Wakan Tipi or God's House, things mm-hmm. like that. Even in our lifetimes, the Coldwater Spring was almost completely destroyed to accommodate a highway construction project. And so I just feel like there's this correlation there, and that those who meant to silence us, to eliminate us, deliberately, strategically chose these most sacred sites to cause the most destruction.
It's interesting you brought that up, because I think when we were talking about my experience with the meeting at Met Council, there was a presentation on what the whole Met Council does. I could not, when they talked about parks and things, the first thing that I thought of was Bedote and how sacred that used to be and still is, but isn't treated that way.
Right. So the Bedote, it's a Dakota word. I don't speak Dakota, but it's about the confluence of the Mississippi River and the Minnesota rivers, right? It's an important place for the people who are here first, the Dakota people. Their origin story concerns the spring, Coldwater Spring, as we call it. That's where life emerged, human life. And so it's this super sacred. And after the U.S.-Dakota War of 1862, that was a site of a massive prison camp, mostly women, children, and elders that were marched hundreds of miles and then held prisoner there. So again, a major desecration of an incredibly sacred site.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's fun to be able to tell people that, because, again, we talk about this a lot, and it's so true that even our white allies and our allies across Minnesota and Turtle Island especially do not know this.
Some Native people don't, right? But, yeah.
Right.
It's time for some truth-telling.
Or a book, like you said, and that's why that's why I thought about that.
I was thinking more like an article, but okay, maybe a blog post. But
you can make it a book if you put a bunch of pictures in there too.
There you go. But the group that you're part of, this Native Advisory Group for the Metropolitan Council, originally was intended to come together to help first step craft a land acknowledgement, right, or a land embodied. Acknowledgement. But again, the intent has always been to create a permanent piece of regional government to center Native voices. And I will say this, at the very first meeting of the group, the one that I was at, and you were,
I heard
agenda had been set, and originally there was going to be a Metropolitan Council staff presentation on Metropolitan Council's roles, the presentation that you got on Monday. And instead, I asked that we restructure the agenda, put in a couple of prompt questions, and then have the advisory group speak to those and really say whatever they wanted. But to me, it was incredibly important that Native people spoke first in this process, because if it was the institutional people that spoke first, the non-Native people, Native people wouldn't speak in the same way. And I feel like the process would feel differently. And so we spent about, you know, the whole time pretty much just kind of going around the room and people speaking up, and to a person in that room, people opposed the idea of land acknowledgments. And they said, you know, that's one thing. What are you going to do about it? Right. So you've already reframed this process as establishing the Metropolitan Council's commitment to the land, to the water, to the first people. So it's more active already. And Robert, I'll tell you the other thing that just really struck me at that first meeting was how much laughter was in that room. And in my experience, usually, generally when Native people get involved in one of these sort of institutional things, people bring the stoic Indian identities, right? And kind of quiet and distrustful. And for me, that felt so good that for an hour and a half, we laughed together and I thought, okay, this is an indigenous process.
Yeah, good medicine, laughter, and medicine. And the people too that you picked. I knew everyone, and that really, really there's amount of respect and looking around in the room with the doers, and I think they. What we talked a little bit about the land acknowledgement, and I know people that listen to this show know what I think about the land acknowledgement, and it's pretty funny. I think a lot of people at that meeting felt the same way.
Oh yeah, they do, and they're clear about it, right?
So, right.
So we have to listen. We'll listen and adapt. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling something very special is going to happen. We've already had Allison presented to the Metropolitan Council again as we set these guidelines for the 2050 comprehensive plans. Mm-hmm. You know, we're also kind of centering equity. Yeah. And your work and the work of this Native advisory group are a cornerstone of that equity work.
Absolutely. It's funny, too. I was running out of fingers. How old would I be in 2050? And I think I'm going to be pretty old.
Yeah, 90 would be 90. Yeah.
But that's what we talk about in all seriousness as being Indigenous, Native American, is that we think about the generations before and after us, the seven generations.
Right. Yeah. So it's a great place to have Native voices in the lead. And, you know, I've long thought, you know, we've done so much damage to the land, the water, the air. And for years, I've thought globally that Indigenous solutions are mm-hmm. the solutions, right? And everyone's Indigenous to somewhere. It just right. has to do with how long your people have been colonized.
Absolutely.
So how do we find our way back to these Indigenous, more local kinds of ways of being and being with our relatives, the earth, the water, and establishing those? And, you know, here we have a little window of opportunity that I intend to keep open as long as possible to actually do that for our region. And I think we're really providing a service.
Yeah, that's awesome. Seriously, and I guess I use that word a lot, but that's stupendous that this is happening. And I really, really, really like what you have to say. I tried to say it, but not as eloquently as you just did about our white relatives that have been colonized in the past. And I know one of my favorite natives and speakers, John Trudell, always talked about that.
Mm-hmm. And I really got an education from our local artist and activist, climate activist, Rory Wakeemup, who was the director of our gallery, All My Relations yep. Arts, for a while. And he used to make that point a lot. And I really respected that because mm-hmm. I know our white relatives can feel excluded when we talk right. about Indigenous solutions and things. But they have indigeneity that they have to rediscover, right? They have to
absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we can talk more about that, but I just totally agree with that. And I think just giving our allies out there a reminder, too, that, you know, there's a lot of different variations of this, but our medicine wheel includes everybody on Turtle Island and the planet.
I agree. So again, I'm grateful you're participating. I'm grateful all those incredibly high quality Native folks are participating in this. And let's see if we can change the world a little.
Yeah. Well, one part at a time, and I'm all for that. And it was one student at a time, because when I was a high school teacher, I always told new mm-hmm. teachers, I said, you know, you're going to change somebody's life. You just may not never whose. And it might be just one person a year, but you're going to do that. So, Robert, you're doing that right now. And, you know, in honor of Wendy being back home, I'm going to have you bring up whatever you want to talk about in the third segment.
Ooh. Sounds good.
All right. Hey, Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Ooh. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air.
AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune into Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Gear up for a day of community spirit. Edina Rides for Education invites you to roll into a fun day of biking on Saturday, May 4th, starting at Fred Richards Park. Organized by the Rotary Club of Edina Morningside, they're all about service above self, and they're calling on you to join the ride. Opt for a leisurely 5 or 10 mile route and explore the scenic, car-free bike paths Edina has to offer. And here's the best part. Your participation in Edina Rides will support various educational nonprofits across the area. Registration is easy at edinarides.com. Take advantage of early bird pricing, just $25 for adults and $15 for kids. Plus, your organization can be part of the fun too. Sponsorship opportunities support Rotary's mission and local educational programs. Various levels offer lots of chances to promote your brand. So gear up and pedal for a purpose on Saturday, May 4th with Edina Rides for Education. More at edinarides.com.
This is Chad, owner of AM950. I want to tell you about a better, more environmentally friendly way to care for your lawn with Natural Lawn. Natural Lawn has been treating Minnesota lawns for more than 20 years with organic-based natural products that feed the soil without unnecessary chemicals. That means an envy-worthy, healthier lawn that's safer for your family and your furry friends. Natural Lawn has no contracts and is 100% satisfaction guaranteed. So let Natural Lawn handle your lawn care so you can enjoy your lawn. More at naturallawn.com.
I'm Angela Warner for Warner Stellium. Sometimes appliances break. Other times you spend years wishing they would. We get it. That's why right now we're paying you to upgrade with our trade-in sale. We'll pay you $50 for each appliance you replace. Our in-store specialists take out the guesswork of wondering what's the best one and which one will fit. Then Warner Stellion Professional Crews will deliver, install, and take your old stuff away, saving you time and money. So outsource your stress and shop family-owned Warner Stellion.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Slight chance of showers and storms tonight with a low of 41, then Friday sunny with a high of 60. Just a few tickets remain for Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour Saturday night at the Pantages Theater in Minneapolis. Don't miss Stephanie with all of her friends. Get tickets at AM950Radio.com.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by All My Relations Arts and their current gallery exhibit, Okeezy, in partnership with the American Swedish Institute. Final chance to see this exhibit is this weekend on April 13th.
Hey, and what does Okeezy mean?
To heal.
Right on. And we all are in that journey in one way or another. So I just want to remind everyone of that, because we also don't know where other people are in their lives, so always be kind. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, again, Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and love talking to you, Robert. And I was talking to a friend today at lunch, and he's a friend of mine, long time. He isn't Native American, and I just reminded him, he's a few years older than me, I just reminded him about 1978, being first year we could practice our own religion, and he was like in shock. You could see the shock in his face, and here's somebody that old.
So here's the big question, Robert. Could you pronounce your old friend's name?
Alex Salutis.
Ah, very good. So it's just me. It's just me.
Easy. Haley, tell Robert it's not just him.
I promise you, Robert, it is not just you.
Thank you. I feel better. Well, and I would note our next show. So the Okeezy show closes on Saturday. So if you get a chance, please do. And then the next show is going to be just fascinating. It's the artist's name is Frank Buffalo Hyde. The show is called Alternative, and it's going to be a good one. And so that will open in May 9th and run through June 13th.
Haley brought that up yesterday, and I said, wow, another t-shirt there, because I always liked Vaccinative. Wanted to make that a new t-shirt.
I know. I like that name a lot.
I love it. And then I got to tell you, we're planning our open house. If folks don't know, May is American Indian Month in the state of Minnesota. It's the only state that has that. It was an initiative of the American Indian Movement to establish that. And so here in the cities, there's a lot of festivities. There's a huge parade May 1st, starting from Little Earth of United Tribes. There's a parade entry contest. Prizes are going to be great. So I'd urge people to come down there. Also, we have our, we're getting our bling set for our open house on May 21st at NACDI. It's NACDI. It's a Powwow Grounds coffee shop, and it's the American Indian Community Development Corporation. Join open house. It's going to be great. It's going to be like a little mini music fest. But anyway, so we were discussing in the office, we have to order our t-shirts and things like that. And someone brings up, oh, don't forget to order one for Robert Pilot.
Love that.
Right?
You know, so too, I'm not going to.
We get I'm you.
Not, I'm not going to mention Jolene's name, but she also said, you know, we're going to have these new posters with Lily Gladstone, and you're going to have to come and get it. And I went, can you save me one? She goes, no, you have to come and get it.
I'll be texting Jolene for that.
Yeah. Keep supplying you the bling.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And coming up, you know, we're really excited about the Four Sisters Market coming up, and also just the warmer weather and be able to see our relatives outside. And
it's going to be a great market season. And if you want to get to, we can talk about the Uber Lyft situation here. There were some major developments today, but another thing, and this just came across my news feeds, and I didn't even know this, but a former director of All My Relations Arts Gallery, Deani Whitehawk, who has a brilliant international career that she kind of incubated here and went out and did all of her great stuff. And she's a MacArthur Genius Grant Fellow recently. She's won some other really prestigious award. And she has now been made a Guggenheim Fellow, 2024 Fellow. It was just announced that today, I think. And so that's huge as well. And so just really wanting to support not just the former All My Relations Arts Gallery director, but just to support a Native sister in her brilliant career.
Is that Sandy's daughter?
Yes.
Sandy Whitehawk's daughter? Yeah, I saw that too. And she has like art all over the place. She has a big installation in New York City, I know of. And I always miss her when I'm there. She's there and I'm not, and she is, so.
And she'll be having a solo show at the Walker Arts Center here in Minneapolis, which is our big, it's non-Native arts institution, but kind of the big one. And I think it's coming up, is it this? I'm trying to look for the date really quickly, but she says she's planning something big and sculptural for the Walker Arts Center solo show coming up.
Wow. Yeah. And I like, you know.
The fall of 2025. That's when she'll have the show at Walker Arts Center. Thanks.
The fall of 2025?
Correct.
Okay. I'm going to use my fingers and see how old I am in 2025 now. Okay, Robert. Well, what else do you want to talk about in all seriousness? Because I really enjoy our time together. And sometimes I throw you a left curve, like the Uber thing. Right. And
right. And let's talk about it. We can talk about that. I always open up a bunch of news tabs before I come on the show, just because I don't know where you're going to head. So the last few weeks, I've really opened up a lot of federal kinds of stories and national political kinds of stories, because I feel like for sure that's what you're going to want to talk about, and then we don't. But the Uber Lyft situation, let's talk about that, huh?
Well, I have a question, and I know you're on top of things here. Two things. Now, this bill by the city council is for the drivers to make enough money to survive. And two, isn't there still cabs out there?
There are some cabs, but the cab industry was really decimated by the rideshare introduction here. And so I heard the number. It's ridiculously small. It's in the dozens of cab licenses that are still active in the city. And so what happened here was the Minneapolis City Council passed an ordinance to demand that Uber and Lyft pay a certain amount to their drivers, both hourly and per mile. And the interest was in bringing the Uber and Lyft drivers pay up to the city's minimum wage, which is $15 an hour. And it caused quite an uproar. Uber and Lyft have said they are leaving. This was supposed to go into effect May 1st.
Right.
And both Uber and Lyft have made moves to leave the market. And it's a concern, right? And and I don't try to second guess what city council members do. You know, for 12 years I did that job, and you know, I have to trust that they're doing what they think is right. But it could potentially be so disruptive. And another hat I wear in the community is I chair the city's Convention and Visitors Association.
Yes.
And some 10,000 rides per day, Uber and Lyft rides, are associated with our airport, Minneapolis-St. Paul International. And what's going to happen to those, and the message that it's sending to potential visitors and conventioners is having an impact already. And so today, the city council voted to defer implementation of this action until July 1st. And so it gives us a few more months, but to either negotiate with the Uber and Lyft or establish alternatives, but most importantly, to let our state legislature do their work. And the state had already launched a study about wages, and they just came out. It was, I think, the day after the city council took the action to try to force Uber and Lyft to raise wages. The state came out with their report and recommendations that'll, you know, accomplish maybe not everything the city council was looking for, but a lot. And so now there's this belief or interest in allowing the state legislature to continue their work, seeing how that impacts the city of Minneapolis's interest, and hopefully figuring out a way that we can all go forward together.
Right. And I appreciate you clearing that up, because I watch the news and read the newspaper, and I'm confused. And
it is. You know, it's complicated, right? And
yeah.
And the impacts are far-reaching, and so
right.
So we'll see what happens. I really give credit. Several city council members had to kind of moderate their positions. I'm hearing really, I think, insightful and thoughtful comments from city council members now. And the action to reconsider and to postpone this was unanimous amongst our 13-member city council. So that's encouraging as well. And I feel like we do need more time. We need to be more thoughtful. And so I'm grateful they took this action today.
Awesome. Hey, so open up your tab about Trump. And one of
there's too many of them. Which one do you want me to open up?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, definitely. Which one? Well, I just think the court date's coming. He keeps on wanting to get out of the court date. And then also this fiasco about talking out of both sides of his mouth when it came to this law back in 1862 or 64. I guess that's what they think of when they think of Make America Great Again back in 1864. Right.
Well, just that line, it's Confederate era law that was established before Arizona was even a state. And there are actually two kind of geographical configurations of what Arizona was like at the time this law was passed. Neither of them are consistent with 21st century Arizona. So the question is, well, where is this actually applicable? Part of it includes Las Vegas, for example.
Right.
I mean, it's so ill-figured. And and then, of course, Republicans overall are trying to, I heard this described as an abortion earthquake. They're trying to figure out how to respond to this abortion earthquake. You're right, they're lying to people. Trump himself has said, well, it's up to the states, and so then that's the law of the land, and that he would have no interest in signing a bill establishing a federal federal law around mm-hmm. banning abortions, or and people are just saying he's lying. And even House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, I mean, he just said it all. He's lying.
Right.
You know, but they realize that they're going to lose elections because of these ill-thought laws and this unwillingness, this incredibly sexist unwillingness to promote women's autonomy over their own bodies. So they're losing elections, so they're backpedaling, they're lying to people. But I think it's going to have significant impact on the elections in November.
Absolutely. And we got to keep talking about it. So thanks again, Robert, for, for talking about that with me, because those are the things we got to remind our people that are our relatives, and then also remind our relatives to be able to bring this information up. So it's very important that you talked about that. Appreciate you. Appreciate you being on, as
appreciate
always.
You too.
All right. Hey, we'll be right back with Bob Blake from Red Lake with the Solar Bear with the Solar News. Ho-wah. You're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Attention, Native American community. As we prepare for American Indian Celebration Month in Minnesota this May, it's essential to prioritize the health and safety of our communities. With social gatherings and festivities on the horizon, getting vaccinated against COVID-19 is crucial. So let's make getting vaccinated a tradition, inclusive and cross-generational. Imagine gatherings filled with shared stories and cultural celebrations free from the shadow of COVID-19. Remember, protecting yourself and others is what counts. Whether it's time for an updated vaccine or your first shot, all COVID-19 vaccines offer protection, with the latest vaccine especially recommended for our elders over 65. As we gather with friends and relatives this May for American Indian Celebration Month, let's ensure everyone's safety by getting vaccinated. Together, we can uphold our traditions and keep our communities thriving. For more information, including details about clinics offering free vaccines, visit vaccines.gov. This message is brought to you in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Health. The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
How?
How?
I always like to haul, and there's Robert Blake from Red Lake, our friend Solar Bear with the Solar News. As you know, Robert owns Solar Bear, which is a company that helps people and tribes all over Turtle Island with renewable energy, and then also the nonprofit that he has is also Native Sun. So, Robert, you've taken up all the cool names for a Native business, and I want to just let you know that.
It's a marketing tactic. It's a marketing tactic. Uh-huh. Hey, I've got some really interesting news this week.
Cool.
for the solar news with the Solar Bear. out in Oakland, out in California, mm-hmm. out in the Bay Area, they are doing a they're doing a first of the nation kind of experiment. It's called cloud brightening.
Huh.
What it's doing is it's like geoengineering, right? And mm-hmm. so what it's doing is it's trying to you know, with our clouds block the sunlight from hitting the planet, right? Wow. And so so there's actually a lot of people that are, you know, they're trying to figure out, you know, Robert, how to deal with climate change, how to deal with the effects of this. Some people are for geoengineering. You know, another form of geoengineering would be, I would say, carbon capture, you know, where they're saying they're going to take the carbon out of there and they're going to put it in the ground and have pipelines for carbon capture, carbon capture pipelines. Anyways, there's a lot of this happening right now. And so a lot of folks are trying to test out stuff like this. But this method right here is really interesting because, you know, some folks think that this could do us more harm than it could do us good, Robert. So I think this is something to watch because, you know, if when we start, I think, messing with, you know, with the world's natural state, I think I think it could go either way. So I think this is an interesting story to watch. And the solar bear with the solar news will keep his eye on it. Another story that just came out too, Robert, and I think this is really interesting. I think everyone should know about this, is a European court rules that human rights are violated by climate inaction. So so what basically happened is there's a court in Switzerland that basically, you know, Greta Thunberg and another activist, Strasbourg, were basically went into court and said that because, you know, countries and governments aren't acting on climate change, that it's a violation against human rights. So a court in Switzerland said that the argument was valid. They were in court arguing this case. And I think this is really interesting because this could be something that may pick up steam and go around the world using this argument, using this logic.
I when you first said that, I was thinking too, because we all know where people that are lower income are suffer from climate change more, and all these factory farms and things like that. So when you first said that, that's where I thought it was heading. But that even sounds interesting, where using climate as a almost as a person.
Yeah. It looks like there's about 2,000 women that are in this one group that are in this class action suit, and it's happening, Robert. And they're saying that, and they're blaming the polluters too. They're blaming the fossil fuel companies, and they're taking the fight right to them. And I got to hand it to these people, like, that's pretty bold, because I'm assuming that somewhere down in the line, you know, they've probably used fossil fuels to fly on an airplane to drive somewhere, and you know, this is really going to be interesting. So but a court has said that this is a violation of human rights, that governments and entities are not taking the climate change seriously. So they're backing this up.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What else you got with the solar news? And it's funny, we had Robert Lilligren on earlier, so it's the Robert Show with Haley.
Yeah.
yeah. Robert's the best. Robert's the best. Hey. Robert, another something that happened in the Midwest not too long ago. It was out in Ohio. There was a lawsuit that came about because there were politicians that were taking money in this case out in Ohio around from the utilities and everything like that. Well, just real quickly, First Energy gave $1 million to this lieutenant governor out there, and the document shows it. And so, essentially, you know, there was just this big bribery scandal of like a pay to play type of situation. And so this is currently happening out in Ohio right now, and it's all around utilities, you know, basically trying to block renewable energy to, you know, onto the grid. This is another example, Robert, of, I think, you know, the power of renewable energy and how this is just like it's happening. And it's so hard for, I think, the establishment to like get their heads wrapped around like this is going to be the future. And and so you either go with it or you don't. But if you start bribing politicians, and you're a politician, everyone out there, you're a politician, you're listening to this, you know, look at what happened in Ohio. Like you could go to jail. You could like over some solar. I mean, I don't know. I just think it's stupid. Right. So just know that, I mean, these things are happening and people are paying attention. People are looking at documents and people really want renewable energy. This is in a red state, Robert, Ohio.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The Republicans want solar. I mean, this is like, you know, so I mean, you know, it's not just a Democrat or Republican thing. People, just Americans, regular Americans want renewable energy. And so I think politicians really need to stop fighting it and say, sorry, the masses want it. No matter how much money you pay me to look the other way, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. And boy, I wish that there was some technology that I could have a little fan on the top of my, or a little windmill on the top of my house and then solar panels. So like at night I could get solar energy from the wind and day just to be in the city here. And there's too many restrictions right now, but I wish there was some company like Solar Bear that would start something.
I was just out in Philadelphia, Robert, and
keynote speaker, I heard.
Yeah. I couldn't believe the crowd and the people out there on the East Coast. And I was talking to some Philadelphians and they are going gangbusters on solar out there. I had no idea how like exciting and like energetic people are in Philadelphia over renewable energy. So it was amazing. People were clapping and it was a really good time. And I just want to send a big shout out to the folks in Philadelphia. Thank you for all the hospitality. It was wonderful. But Robert, I could not believe how many people in Philadelphia. Oh, and by the way, they said they are watching Minnesota. They said they like what Minnesota is doing and they're watching us and they want to implement some of the legislation and policy that we got going on in our state out there in Philadelphia. So that's the Solar Bear with the solar news.
Great job and good job out there for all the communities out there to hear the word from the Solar Bear, Bob Blake from Red Lake. Hey, we're still here. We are the seventh generation.
And free Leonard Peltier now.